Challenge Cyber Defense.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber Decryption. It's now.
This February breaking news is brought to you by the Cyber Intelligence Bureau, a division of the Epidemiology Lab at Orange Cyber Defense. The data is based on collected and cross-analyzed discussions from various hacktivist groups on Telegram channels. Here is our analysis of investigations. In a context of geopolitical tensions, this synthesis reviews hacktivist campaigns from February 2026, their targets, and operational methods.
Right. And it is Thursday, February 26, 2026. And I have to say, looking at the sheer volume of data we've analyzed for this month, the digital landscape isn't just active, it's aggressively boiling over.
Boiling over really feels like the right phrase here, especially when you look at this massive stack of Telegram logs. You know, usually when we do these deep dives into cyber war, I'm expecting you to tell me about some server crashing in a basement or, I don't know, a website displaying a 404 error for 20 minutes. Annoying stuff, sure, but basically invisible to the average person.
Yeah, that is the traditional view, the intangible nuisance.
But this month, this deep dive feels entirely different. We aren't just talking about code on a screen anymore. We're talking about hackers reaching out and actually touching the physical world. I mean, I'm seeing notes here about water supplies, heating systems in people's living rooms, greenhouses, even spying on people in spas.
That is exactly the crucial shift we need to discuss today. The barrier between the digital anger on Telegram and the physical infrastructure of daily life has thinned dramatically in February. Our mission today is to sift through these raw logs. We're talking thousands of messages from groups like NoName05716, The Vulture, and others to understand exactly how they're doing this. We need to see how geopolitical tension is being translated into physical levers being pulled in Europe, Japan, and the U.S.
It's a little unsettling, honestly, but before we get to the creepy spy cameras, and we will definitely get to those, we need to set the stage. None of this is random, right? These guys aren't just spinning a globe and picking a target blindfolded.
Far from it. This brings us directly to the geopolitical tensions driving the situations we're seeing. If you look at the timeline of attacks in February 2026, they are almost entirely reactive. It is a near-perfect mirror image of physical foreign policy decisions.
So it's literally cause and effect. A politician steps up to a podium, makes an announcement, and the hackers immediately step up to their keyboards.
It is almost exactly that immediate. Let's look at Italy, for example. The data connects a massive, sustained wave of attacks directly to the Italian government's decision to extend military aid to Ukraine. We are talking about a package exceeding 3 billion euros extended through 2026.
3 billion is a very serious commitment, and I assume that didn't go over too well in these Telegram channels.
It was viewed as a direct provocation, immediate retribution. Then you have Japan. Now, usually we think of the European theater when discussing this, but cyber activity targeting Japanese infrastructure spiked violently right after reports surfaced that Japan was joining a NATO program to purchase military equipment for Ukraine. That, combined with providing a staggering $15 billion in financial aid.
$15 billion. Okay, well, that certainly puts a giant neon target on your back. It explains why we are seeing so much activity in Asia, which kind of feels like a new frontier for these specific groups.
It expands the battlefield globally, absolutely. But the triggers remain consistent. Look at Germany. Chancellor Friedrich Merz makes an announcement at the Munich Security Conference about creating a powerful land army. That rhetoric alone, literally just the words, made Germany a primary target.
It's so interesting that a speech is treated the exact same way as writing a check.
In the information war, rhetoric is a weapon. In Spain, Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez confirmed 2 billion euros in aid. Almost instantly, the hacktivists launched what they proudly labeled Operation Spain.
I keep seeing a specific word popping up in the translation logs, actually, Russophobic. It seems like they just slap that label on anyone they target. Is that just their PR branding?
It is their moral license, really. It's a narrative tool. By labeling a nation Russophobic, they aren't just disagreeing with the policy, they are framing the target as an existential threat to their very identity. In the eyes of these hacktivist groups, once you are labeled Russophobic, it legitimizes attacks on anything. It justifies hitting a Ministry of Finance, sure, but as we've seen, it also justifies hitting a water pump or a bakery.
That is a highly convenient way to simplify the world. You are the enemy, so absolutely everything you own is fair game. So we know the why. Let's move into the key actors and operational alliances. Who are the main characters in this month's report? Because it seems like a very crowded cast.
It is a densely crowded ecosystem. The dominant player, without a doubt, is NoName05716. They are the loudest, the most prolific, and they really seem to be the ones setting the tempo. But what is fascinating in this month's OSINT investigations is that they aren't working in isolation. We are seeing real operational alliances forming.
Kind of like a Legion of Doom situation.
A digital coalition, yes.
Yeah.
The logs mention a specific partnership called the Z-Pentest Alliance. This involves No Name 05716 partnering directly with a group called The Vulture.
The Vulture. I have to give it to them. They really know how to pick villain names. What exactly do they bring to the table?
The Vulture seems to specialize in more intrusive surveillance hacks, looking for eyes on the ground. But then you have a totally different breed of actor, the Dark Storm Team.
Dark Storm Team. Sounds like a bad weather forecast.
These guys are interesting because they blur the line between true believers and businessmen. They are identified in the logs as selling botnet access, charging about $100 a day. But they also participate in political attacks, like the ones we saw against Italian airports.
Wait, so they are mercenaries. I can just pay them $100 and rent a cyber army for the afternoon.
Essentially, yes. It commercializes the capability. And they aren't the only ones. We see Pharaoh's team active in the logs as well.
Oh, I saw that name. The report mentioned they were selling shells. Can we pause there for a second? Because to me, a shell is something you find on a beach. I assume that's not what they're trading on Telegram.
No, definitely not. In this context, think of a shell like a master key copy. Let's say a hacker breaks into a legitimate website, maybe a small business or a municipal server. They plant a backdoor, a hidden entry point. That is the shell. Pharaoh's team sells these keys to other criminals.
So they do the breaking and entering, but they don't actually rob the house. They just sell the open window to the next guy.
Exactly. And the wildest part of this marketplace dynamic, they offer warranties and customer support.
You're kidding me. Customer support. Like, press 1 if your illegal backdoor isn't working today.
I'm completely serious. If you buy a shell and the website administrator patches the hole, Pharaoh's team will replace it.
Yeah.
It's access as a service, completely professionalized. It blurs the line between crime and hacktivism because the tools used for political attacks are bought in these very criminal marketplaces.
That is bizarrely professional for a crime ring. Who else is on the board?
You have Dynet, who are very active targeting U.S. infrastructure like CISA and NASA, as well as Poland. You have the Russian Legion, also known as Shadow Claws Z404, who focused heavily on Denmark. And Overflame, who are forming alliances with groups like HackAxe to target Ukraine.
And just to be completely clear for you listening, this isn't a one-sided fight, is it? The report mentions DI Ukraine.
Correct. The GUR, or Ukrainian Defense Intelligence, they're very present in the source material, effectively trolling the Russian groups. They broadcast their kinetic successes, drone strikes, recruiting for the International Legion. It creates a massive digital tug of war. The logs reflect a battlefield where information and morale are contested just as fiercely as the servers are.
Okay, let's get to the part of the analysis of attack vectors and sectoral targets that genuinely worries me. We mentioned in the intro that they are moving beyond websites. The report calls this a shift to ICS and SCADA targets. We need to break that down because that sounds like alphabet soup, but I have a feeling it's dangerous alphabet soup.
It is arguably the most critical takeaway from February. We are seeing a dangerous evolution in their methods. Previously, hacktivism was mostly about DDoS attacks crashing a website so you can't read the news. It's digital vandalism. But now they're attacking ICS, which is industrial control systems, and SCADA, which stands for supervisory control and data acquisition.
In plain English, for those of us who don't run a power plant for a living.
Think of it this way. IT is the computer on your desk that handles email. OT, or operational technology, is the computer that tells a physical valve to open, a pump to spin, or a furnace to ignite. Hackers are now actively logging into the OT side.
So they aren't just crashing the customer service website of the water company. They are logging into the system that controls the actual water flowing through the pipes.
Precisely. Let's look at the specific examples pulled from the logs. In Italy, they targeted water supply networks. They accessed tanks and pumping stations in places like Roccaraso. The screenshots they proudly posted show they could view water levels and theoretically manipulate the pumps themselves.
If you manipulate a high-pressure pump, you can burst pipes. You can completely cut off a city's supply.
Or contaminate it. And it wasn't just water infrastructure. The logs show them accessing control panels for fireplaces and boilers in private homes and small businesses.
Wait, private homes? Like consumer smart home stuff?
Yes. They found exposed control panels online. They could change temperature set points. Imagine waking up in the middle of winter and your heating is turned off, or your boiler is cranked to a dangerous pressure level, all because a hacker in another country decided to make a point about your government's foreign policy.
That feels incredibly invasive. It's one thing to attack a massive government website. It's another thing entirely to freeze someone in their own living room. And speaking of physical damage, let's talk about Japan, the greenhouse story.
This is a prime example of their sophisticated targeting. In Japan, hackers accessed greenhouse management systems. Now, modern agriculture is highly technical. These systems control ventilation, humidity, and CO2 levels to the decimal.
So they aren't just stealing data about how many cucumbers were grown?
No. If you alter the humidity and CO2 levels drastically, you can destroy an entire harvest in hours. It's direct economic sabotage. They also compromise workstations running Mitsubishi Electric MT Developer 2 software.
That sounds incredibly specific.
It is highly specific. That software is used to program factory automation. By targeting that, they are implying they want to stop assembly lines. They are actively looking for the brakes on the Japanese economy.
And then there's that creepy factor we teased earlier, the surveillance hacks. You mentioned bakeries.
This stands out because it serves no strategic military purpose whatsoever. It's purely psychological. The logs show them accessing CCTV cameras in a bakery in Bukovina, Ukraine, and a spa complex in Sendai, Japan.
A spa complex, so they're just watching regular people relax.
And betting shops in Spain. They take screenshots of everyday people going about their day and post them on Telegram for their followers. The message is simple. We see you. You aren't safe even when you're buying bread or getting a massage. It is raw intimidation targeting the civilian population.
We see you. That's a chilling message. Let's do a deeper dive into the analysis of European countries' cyber attacks, because the impact really varied a lot by region. Italy seems to have taken the brunt of it this month.
Italy was the absolute main target in February. Beyond the water and heating hacks we mentioned, they hit the transport sector, Hardinas, which manages the roads, and the Milan Malpensa airport. They also went after municipalities like Parma and Reggio Emilia.
And didn't they make it weirdly personal with the Italian cyber chief?
Bruno Frattasi, the head of the National Cybersecurity Service, yes. The hackers personally mocked him in their public channels. They were taunting him, basically saying, you warned everyone, but you still couldn't stop us. It's a very schoolyard bully, but the bully happens to be holding a sledgehammer.
Then we have Spain. Operation Spain. Was this just about annoying the government ministries?
They hit the ministries, interior, finance, transport. But the real pain was felt in the private sector. It was a significant attack on Telnet infrastructure.
Telnet is a major router manufacturer, right?
Correct. The attack allegedly caused huge internet outages for corporate customers of Movistar. This had a domino effect. It hit logistics companies like Grupo Logista and the energy sector, specifically Naturgy. They effectively disrupted business operations across the country. It wasn't just a government headache, it was a commercial blackout.
And Germany. You mentioned the Land Army speech triggered that wave.
Germany's attacks were timed specifically to coincide with the Munich Security Conference. They disrupted public transport systems like Deutsche Bahn and regional transport in Schleswig-Holstein. And again, the smart home systems, lighting, heating, blinds. They want the German public to feel the disruption at home, literally turning their lights on and off.
It's psychological warfare. Your government talks about armies, so we will play with your living room thermostat. And finally, Denmark.
Retaliation for the F-16 jets. Denmark retired their F-16s and transferred them to Ukraine. In response, the hackers launched Operation Viking Capture.
Viking Capture. They really do love their dramatic operation names.
They really do. They targeted municipalities like Solrød and Holbæk. But interestingly, they extended attacks to Greenland, Air Greenland, and local municipalities there. It was a highly symbolic strike against Danish territory as a whole, reminding them that their reach is global.
So we see the damage. Let's move to operational tactics and methods. How are they actually doing this? We talked about the believers and the mercenaries, but what are the actual tools? I keep hearing about this DDoS-IA project in the data.
The DDoS-IA project is the primary engine for Noname 05716. And this is where it gets really interesting for anyone studying crowd psychology. They have completely gamified the cyber war.
Gamified? Like, do they have a leaderboard? Do they get high scores for hacking?
Exactly like that. It's a volunteer-based botnet. You join their Telegram, you download their software, and you let it use your computer's bandwidth to attack their targets. The software tracks your contribution. If you participate in enough attacks, you climb the leaderboard.
So it's like a twisted loyalty program for cyber vandals. Do they get anything out of it besides bragging rights in a chat room?
Money. They pay the top contributors in cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
So you have people who might not even care about the politics at all, just running the software in the background to earn a little side cash.
Yeah.
It crowdsources the massive bandwidth needed to crash these huge targets. It turns everyday internet users into a digital artillery wing.
That is disturbingly clever. But for the physical stuff, the water pumps and the heaters, that's not a DDoS attack, right? You can't just overwhelm a water pump with web traffic to make it change pressure.
No, that requires a totally different method. For the physical attacks, the method of choice is HMI exploitation.
HMI. Break that down for us.
Human-machine interface. It's the screen or the digital dashboard a worker uses to control the physical machine. The problem is, many of these systems are very old. They were designed for closed networks. But for convenience, someone down the line connected them to the public internet.
So they're just sitting there completely exposed online.
Sitting there, often with weak passwords or literally no passwords at all. The hackers use automated scanning tools to find these exposed interfaces. They brute force a password. And once they are in, they have the exact same control as the engineer sitting in the actual plant.
And they leave a calling card when they do that.
They do. They often rename the system interfaces to no name 05716. Imagine logging into your industrial boiler system and the name of the heater has been changed to the name of a Russian hacker group. It's digital graffiti, but on a machine that is critical for public safety.
That brings us to the motivation and psychological profiling. We talked about politics, but there has to be something else driving this behavior. I mean, renaming a boiler. That feels like pure ego.
Based on the inferences we can draw from the logs, there are three main psychological drivers. First is ideological retribution. They constantly use the hashtag time of retribution. They genuinely view themselves as the righteous defenders of Russia. They believe they are punishing the West for its policies.
They see themselves as the good guys in this story.
They absolutely do. But the second driver is ego and recognition.
Oh.
They are obsessed with media coverage. They track their mentions in cybersecurity reports,
right.
Literally reports like the one we are discussing today. If they rank high in a report by Radware or Hackmanac, they post it like a trophy.
So the fact that we're doing a deep dive on them right now, they'd probably love this.
They would view it as total validation of their relevance. And the third driver is what we call the God mode complex.
God mode, like in a video game where you can't be hurt and you can manipulate anything on the map.
Exactly. There is a specific, intense fascination with controlling physical environments from afar. Turning the lights on and off in a smart home in Germany or draining a water tank in Italy while sitting at a desk in St. Petersburg, it suggests a deep psychological need to demonstrate absolute power over the victim's daily life. It's saying, I can touch you in your home and you are completely powerless to stop me.
It's a massive power trip. And it really highlights the difference between the true believers and the mercenaries we talked about earlier. Both are dangerous, but the believers are out to make a psychological point. So, bringing it all together for the conclusion, the analysis of contemporary cyber activity, what is the big picture here?
The big picture from February 2026 shows a fully matured hybrid war. We have volunteer hackers acting as a coordinated paramilitary force, reacting in real time to geopolitical grievances.
It's not just random noise or kids messing around anymore.
Not at all. And the shift is the key takeaway for you to remember. We have moved past simple website vandalism. We are firmly in the realm of operational technology attacks. The targeting of water, heating, and industrial automation in Europe and Japan signals a clear, deliberate intent to cause physical economic damage and public discomfort.
And I think it's really important to reiterate right here, the information in this document is the result of OSINT investigations. These sources are of cyber origin, and this information is an analysis from a strictly cyber perspective. The whole report strictly respects the principle of neutrality, which is fundamental to the research carried out. We are just telling you what is in the logs.
Absolutely. We are reporting on the capabilities and stated motivations found in the raw data, without endorsing any of their viewpoints.
It's a very sobering deep dive. We've seen them move from crashing websites to actively testing the locks on our water and heating systems.
And that raises the final provocative question I want to leave everyone with today. We are seeing them play with these systems, turning heaters down, changing humidity in greenhouses. But if hacktivists can now reach into a greenhouse in Japan or a water pump in Italy simply because of a government's foreign policy, what happens when they decide to stop just testing these systems and actually break them?
That is a thought that is definitely going to make me check my own thermostat about 5 times tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you for that incredibly detailed breakdown.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay safe out there, digitally and physically. We'll see you next time.
The cyber threat analyses you need to know about. Cyber decryption. We'll be talking about it on this channel very soon.
Orange Cyber Defense.